Welcome to another episode of Open Wide Say with myself, Lekalolas. This is the podcast where we talk all things sex, all things sexy, kinky, fun, sex positive. Here is where we get all the juicy information. Today I am joined by Tapiwa, aka Sunga Kunji, aka the Master of Rope, who is also a published author in the latest Quirky Quick Guide to Having Great Sex. So maybe a master of more than just role play, especially by the chapters I've read. Welcome, Tapiwa.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. This is exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thanks. Can you tell us just a little bit about yourself and how you identify around sex or anything sex, and who you are? Because I've heard about you.
So I am a dude, I suppose, from Zimbabwe. And I've been in Cape Town for about 15 years now. And during my time here, I've grown a little bit, just a little bit. And within that time, I've started exploring a few different things. And what we're talking about today is my work in a sex education space and in just in a sex positivity space as well. Yeah. So my main, or the work most people know me through, is my rope bondage page on Instagram. But I tried just to celebrate all things sex and intimacy and sexuality and sensuality as well. Yeah.
I met Tabira for our listeners. I met you at one of the Raunchy Renditions, which is a platform to share like intimate sex stories, the good, the bad, and everything in between. And I was like, firstly, who is this person with this amazing voice? And secondly, you spoke so openly about a story around anal play and losing a toy in the process of playing. So we'll get to a little bit about anal play and what you've covered in the book as well, which I really loved, by the way.
Thank you.
But firstly, when I look at role play online and I try and gather as much information as I can, you come up quite a lot, and everyone else that I've spoken to around kink has somehow had either a workshop with you or has spoken to you or has played with you. And I wanted to know from you personally, like the guru of role play in Cape Town, what exactly is role play and like what defines that? And how did you come about it and how did you get into it? Yeah.
So I wouldn't call myself the guru of role play. I think I'm just probably a bit more public with role play, so people know a lot more about me and that work. But yeah, I consider myself a beginner. I'm just a more well-known face, that's all. But it started off in my teenage years when I was creating a lot of different like bracelets and little charms from rope and string and plastic, just playing around, and then somehow that morphed and deviated into a more sensual space, and it became like quite a secretive exploration. I kept it to myself, and with that internalized shame around sex when you're in a teenage kind of mindset, that's when I think about it now, I realize actually it had taken a sexual turn at that point. That's why I was now hiding this thing that I'd been doing all along in quite a public way at home. And for a few years, I was with a person who wasn't able to have sex because she was religious. So after we eventually broke up, I kind of played catch up and started exploring all sorts of different sexual experiences. And I then reconnected with my initial passion for rope work as a teenager. And at that point, I then met, oh, actually, I was made aware that other people do rope work in the world in maybe like 7 years ago. I can't remember now exactly, but my friend Astrid, you know Astrid. And I was like, oh, I thought it was just me doing this weird stuff behind the scenes. Turns out there's a whole community of people doing it. Then I started learning from other people as well, because I'd been self-taught and I'd been playing by myself, just like working things out. And now finally I found like a community. And then I started going for workshops myself. I started going for classes, private sessions, a lot of Googling and YouTubing. And then I realized this actually could serve as a tool for a few different things for different people. So the rope, we can get into this a little bit later, but I then realized the rope wasn't just this artistic thing that I was enjoying that felt good. There were more layers to it, yeah.
I think it's amazing to find people of color and like a whole Black person that is open about kink play and bondage play, and you know, that it's not just, it's painted so in society, and even the, like, I watch YouTube videos to also learn about rope play, because I just don't see on like FetLife and stuff, everything is so white. Everything is so white dominated. Stuff is expensive. It seems like it's for a particular circle of people. What is it like actually being in the space and running workshops yourself and attending workshops as someone that is like a person of color, in quite a like white kink scene of especially Cape Town? What is it like to kind of get in there and, you know, tackle the classist, racist, like ableist way of the sex industry and the sex scene?
It's exactly as you'd imagine. Unfortunately, it's exactly as problematic as you think it would be, to the point where most of the Black people that I know in this realm or in this space, you go to an event once in a while, and then you remember why you don't go to these events often, because it's just difficult to, just because people are now, people who identify as kinksters or people in BDSM, whatever, it doesn't mean the greater issues around South Africa stop existing. Those same issues around race and class and ableism, all that other stuff carries into that space as well. And it's a more, what's the word? It's a better place to engage with people with whiteness compared to general whiteness, but still it's a place you're engaging with whiteness. That's never going to end. So the people within those spaces are a lot more willing to do self-work, to deal with their own bullshit. And you find, yeah, because kinksters tend to be more open-minded, more accepting of other people who are different, and more sympathetic to being disenfranchised or being fetishized or whatever the case may be. But at the end of the day, I'm still a Black guy in that space. So for me, I've focused more on creating my own events, creating my own workshops, providing private tuition for people, because then I can control the space that I'm in. And if I'm going to do an event, then I'll do an event with other Black queer people or Black kinksters in the Cape as well, yeah. Or in Joburg as well, and in Durban. So I've done Joburg, Durban, and Cape Town, yeah. And it's always with another Black person.
Snaps for like also providing the platform and the tuition so that people can, you know, get involved and learn. So, I mean, roleplay, when you Google it and you watch on YouTube, there's like basic knots and there's very intricate knots as well. What exactly does a roleplay look like to you? Like, what defines roleplay? What is roleplay? And like, what type of rope are you using? And yeah, let's start there.
Yeah, I was going to say you can stop there because I'll probably forget all the questions. So for me, it can take on different forms depending on the interaction you're having with the person or the mood I'm in for myself as well. And I'll just give you a few different ways it can differ. So there's the obvious one is more the aesthetic thing, that you want to take a nice photo for maybe like a bedroom photo or maybe out in nature. You just want something pretty for your profile picture, whatever, right? That's one aspect of it. There's no sensuality to that. There can be, but there doesn't have to be. It's just purely technique. I'm putting the rope on you. We grab the shot. Thanks. Bye. Then it can also be someone trying to explore sensuality, So you want like the rope caressing you, stroking you, hugging you, being tender with you, conveying like a very sensual, very light and warm feeling. Or sometimes you want to put people in challenging positions, push their body's limits, maybe introduce a little bit of pain into the mix as well. And then it can be, so all these things don't have to be sexual at all. You can do all those things separate from sex. Then obviously you can incorporate rope into your sexual shenanigans with whoever you play with. And for me, it's just an extension of my creativity, my sensuality, and my sexuality. And depending on the mood, I will do different things with it. But it can also be like a healing tool. A lot of people that I've worked with have some kind of traumatic moment, particularly with the black man, and it's typically queer people. So in South Africa, I am kind of the face of violence for a lot of queer people, right? As a straight black dude. So a lot of it is sort of, what do you call it in psychology? When, like exposure therapy, something like that, yeah. So it's kind of like confronting intimacy because there's a history of violent intimacy with the black person or the black man. And then we can sort of re-script things a little bit by introducing the same avatar for blackness, but changing what that experience means to have a sensual or an intimate or however you want to look at it moment with this person. So it's healing in that way as well. And then the final point I can add on is that the body positivity work. A lot of people enjoy rope as like an indulgent excuse to be body positive, without seeming like they're being vain. So I find people are more comfortable indulging in themselves and getting photos of themselves taken when they can lay the responsibility on the rope, as it were. Yeah.
I'm really interested in the use of sex play, sensual play, sexual play, rope play, as a form of therapy and healing of and facing traumas and unlocking traumas that we hold and you know, kind of just like going through it and working with someone. I think that's amazing. And it's a different way of doing therapy and like decolonizing therapy and looking at, you know, sex positive therapy. So I'm really interested in that. I'll hit you up afterwards. So you also spoke about, you know, pushing boundaries and testing, you know, pushing the limits and a little bit of pain play. What is it like, especially because you are a black man, what how do you navigate those power positions and power play when you are working with someone and doing a play session? Are you always like dumb?
So I'm going to answer that just now, but you had asked me about the ropes that I use as well. I just remembered. Yeah. So I work typically with jute or hemp rope, and I try to make sure whatever rope I'm using is something that's affordable, that anyone else can go buy at a hardware store, at a saving shop, whatever. And you do a little bit of conditioning to it, and you can use it for all your rope work as long as you're not doing suspensions. For me, it's really important that whatever I do, whatever I teach, should be accessible to other people and without having to consider money, right? The only reason stopping you from pursuing what I'm doing is you're not bothered or you don't have the skills right now, but you can learn the skills. Once I'm doing something that costs too much money, I tend to disengage from it because I want to be able to share that thing with other people and provide access to that thing in a very approachable way. So for me, jute, cotton, hemp, pretty straightforward. You can get those at a hardware store or sailing shop as long as you're staying on the ground. Yeah. Then if you want to do suspension work and that comes much later, then you get like strength rated, either synthetic ropes that have a proper strength rating to say it takes a certain amount of force to break this rope, or like a rated jute rope as well. And then back to this new question now. Oh, what was the question?
The question was looking at how do you navigate like power play and
Oh, yes.
being a black man and
Mm.
and if you always dom or if you are submissive at all in your sessions?
So typically, I try and leave power dynamics out of the equation unless it's something someone requests or unless I'm playing with a partner who is inclined to be in a submissive position. Because for me, it's not about power dynamics, it's just about sharing a feeling, sharing an experience, right? And you can do that from a very neutral space. And of course, there's the inherent power structure that exists because of my physical size, my external appearance, that people impose their own power dynamics onto the situation. I'm a man, I'm a bit tall, this voice that I have, and the authority of saying I'm the one with the rope skills, obviously. There's a lot of power around that that can't be avoided. But I certainly don't bring in that energy myself unless it's kind of requested. And yeah, I'm very easily adaptable. So I can be a switch, I can be submissive, I can be dominant, and I can be neutral. Yeah.
Nice. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like to think I'm a switch, but I'm really not.
What are you?
I struggle so hard to be submissive. I just like, I know what I like and I know what I want to do to the, like with the other person. And, mm-hmm. and I struggle to like let go and give the power over. And I guess that also comes from like trauma and comes from like previous sexual experiences, but I mm-hmm. like to hold all the power. Just to go back to like your rope, looking at the particular ropes, because I think people have like this idea that you can use any type of rope and like, you know, it doesn't have to be conditioned at like the rope in a particular way. Do you sell rope kits?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. So here's the big secret, right? With anything that at some point becomes trendy and exciting and buzzwordy in any field, there's always some mythology and dogma that comes with that thing, right? And so in the realm of rope work, there's this idea that you must have the most velvety, the most luxurious piece of rope out there. Each single meter costs like 800 rand and you must do it right. Have a little bamboo floor in your studio. Have all these little reed mats and blah, 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 blah for you to create the experience. Whereas for me, it's a matter of how good are you at creating the mood? How good are you at telling stories? And how good are you at sharing moments with people, right? Because no matter how good your rope is, if you, the person who is curating the space, have nothing to contribute, nothing will come of it. So for me, the rope is secondary to the person wielding the rope. It's not what's driving the situation. And so I buy my rope from hardware stores and from like sailing shops. Then I condition it. And the only reason I condition it is because I'm working with jute, and jute tends to be quite fibrous. So the fibers can get irritating in the nose, and people with like allergies and sinus problems, that kind of stuff. And that's just a matter of, well, there are a few different things you can do to condition the rope, but that's for breathing issues, basically. But I quite like a rough rope if you want to create, if the person likes a bit of like rough play and they like texture, then an unconditioned rope can be quite nice for that as well. If they want a little bit of that rope burn sensation, if they want to really feel like they're being handled by the rope, you don't have to condition the rope. It's just more about the sinuses and the nasal passages, yeah. Mm. For me.
For you. Mm. Lastly, like with rope, I've seen some of your images of, you know, self-suspension and what I assume is self-play. I'm always fascinated on like how you got your camera up there or how you got yourself tied up like that. Do you get pleasure in self-play with rope, and do you often just, you know, practice on yourself or is it not related to pleasure? Is it just technique?
It's a bit of everything. So sometimes it's technique. I'm upskilling myself. So I think it's really, really important, as in my practice, in my practitioner, to be able to feel what other people feel when I tie them up. especially if I'm experimenting with a new harness or a new kind of rope layout. I want to be able to say, I went through this, I know how intense it is, so I know how far I'm pushing you as well, right? Because it's very easy to be like, ha, do more, be more bendy, whatever, right? And demand things of other people because it's not happening to you. But if you can empathize with whatever that person is going through whilst they're in your rope, then I feel like that gives you a bit, you're more prepared to be holding that space for another person. So that's one aspect of it. And the other side is, yeah, I do enjoy it as well. It's like another form of, I incorporate into masturbation, or I just play with it, just the rope alone, just to feel nice. Yeah, just be sensual, maybe just before a bath. And I can wear a rope to work underneath my clothes or on top of my clothes. Even at my cafe, there's rope everywhere. I incorporate rope play into my external environment as well. I've got my plants up through rope work, some decorative pieces, whatever. Yeah. So it's a bunch of different things, but ultimately it's about creativity.
I love how it's incorporated into external art pieces as well. Like your external is reminding you what you're into. For someone that's like maybe afraid of extreme or, and they like the idea of role play, what are your tips to like just getting started or introducing it into their life or and into their sex play? Where do they start?
The best thing to do initially for me is to figure out why you think you want to do it, right? And why that's important is because there's a lot of what you've seen, and then that doesn't necessarily reflect what you actually want and what you need, but your only reference point is what you've seen, right? So you need to sit and really consider, why do I think I would like this thing, and do I see a different version of role play that I think would make sense for me and for whomever I play with, right? That's really important, because trying to emulate other people's idea of role play won't get you to where you want to be. It may be a good starting point, but you need to work out what it is that you like, that you enjoy, and what motivates this keenness for role play. And once you think you know why, then you can, I would recommend seeking out someone who's got some experience with rope, if you want to learn how to tie people, and also if you want to be tied up in a responsible and safe way. And usually I would say, in fact, I always say, get a reference for whomever you're going to play with. Whether you're tying someone or whether they're being tied, you need to have an understanding of who this person is, what they're about. Are you generally safe around them in general? Never mind introducing rope into the mix, just in general. Is this a good human being, or is this as good as a human being can be? And then do some research on the internet so that you can vet this person. So you do some basics on your own to learn how, oh, what this is, a square knot, where rope shouldn't go in the body, this is a dangerous place, this is a good safe space. All that, right? Don't wait on an instructor or a person who's going to teach you or the person who's going to create a scene for you. Don't put the responsibility of your own safety into their hands, right? People assume because you're being tied, you're in a submissive position, you have no say in what's happening, you submit all control to the other person, and that's not how this works. You are an equal participant in this scenario, and you are just responsible for your safety and any negative and positive outcomes of the experience. You can't be a bystander. That's unacceptable to me, yeah. So people need to come with their own agency, and people need to do their own research. And then once you think you have a basic understanding, then you can go for classes, workshops, whether online or in person, and then, yeah, move on from there.
Okay, so one of the main reasons I also wanted to interview you was because, like I said, I saw you perform a story that was quite intimate, and I'd never seen, and actually don't even have that many friends. We talk about sex and everything, but not everyone speaks about how openly great anal play and anal sex is. And I listened to your story and I read Quirky Quick Guide to Having Great Sex, which is amazing. And I just wanted to know from you the ins and outs of anal play and why it is something that you, you know, love to talk about and that you've written about.
So I'm of the opinion that I'm here to have a good time.
Yeah.
I'm here on the planet to have a good time. And part of that good time is having great sex. And part of having great sex is exploring all the different pleasure spots within and on my body. And if you're someone with a prostate, that's one of the those really amazing pleasure spots, right? But that also applies to people without prostates. That applies to everybody has an ass. And there's a ridiculous amount of nerve tissue within that general area. So to me, it made sense that I should explore pleasure in this particular way. And yeah, no, it just made a lot of sense. And for me, I'm very comfortable. And I've been lucky to have partners who've been very comfortable with sex, particularly in more recent years as well. So maybe like the last 6-7 years of my life, to the point where I know I can bring up any topic, any sexual act, even if a person doesn't think they like it, maybe they'll try it or they'll be like, ah, that's not for me, but I won't be shamed about around it, right? So I'm very comfortable talking about it because the people who matter to me don't shame me around the things that I like. So I could give, I don't care about what a stranger thinks about the things that I like. Yeah.
Yeah. You know? You're lucky. You are lucky. That's, you know, it's just like an open field. You can just play. I'm also that is very open to playing. I love anal stimulation. And I think most people that I've interviewed, anal stimulation always comes up, you know, like whether it's dimming and licking of the ass or just putting a finger there for pressure or inserting something. It's just, it takes the sex to like another level and another, like play with everything that's there if you're into it. But there are quite a few things that you mention in your essay on before booty sex, prepping for anal sex. And what are some of like the best tips or the things that people forget when you need to prepare and prep for anal sex or any anal play?
Shall I give you like five pro tips?
Five pro tips, that's it.
Number one, be clean to the level that is required for what you're going to do. So if you know you're staying out of the ass, then that's just a matter of a shower. If you know you're going to be going in shallowish, then that's like a light douching. And if you're not going to be going in ham, then obviously you want to do like an enema. You want to do like an enema or like a more deep douching, right? Because that just makes everybody playing comfortable. All right. So that's one, you know, this is not ranked in any particular way. That's just one thought. Another thought is consent around anal play is another layer you need to engage in. So as with any other aspect of sex, anal sex is also going to require that someone agrees that they want to try this. If you're playing with someone else, obviously playing by yourself, you can give yourself all the consent. Because just because someone has agreed to have sex with you, it doesn't mean they've agreed to have all kinds of sex with you. And you need to clarify, are we going to have this particular kind of sex? What does anal look like for you versus what it looks like for me? Do you want to try anal? Yes. Okay. And suddenly you're putting something inside me. Oh, that's what I mean by anal. I mean rimming. That's what I mean by anal. You know, so clarify what anal means to whomever you're playing with. So cleanliness and consent. And then number three, I would say get the right toys. If you're going to be putting anything inside your body, as we learned from my mistakes, get the right toys because you want to be safe with whatever you're inserting inside your body. And so that means getting something with a flared base that won't get sucked up all the way in. Or if it's something that can go in, it shouldn't be something that can go in and get stuck. So maybe you've got a string to pull it out, or maybe it's like a small ball that can come out quite easily in any case. Yeah. So get the right equipment for sure. And then point number four, I would say lube.
I knew that was coming.
Lots and lots of lube. And for obvious reasons, but I'll give them out in any case. your rectal lining, your ass, your lower intestine, they do produce mucus and lubricates things, but it's not enough for penetrative sex, particularly if you've done like a douching or an enema, then you've stripped away some of the lubrication as well. And because the gut is designed to typically let things out as opposed to let things in, you're going to need to help it out, get more comfortable to accept things. So lots of lube. When you think you've used enough, add a little bit more. That's what I always say. And in line with that, I would say fingernails, please cut your fingers. And make sure you don't have any cuts on your skin. And if you do, then maybe wear gloves for just for health and safety. You don't want to get, because you can still get STIs. You can still pass on other kind of infections as well through your skin if you've got cuts and bruises. And then point number five, what would that be? Relax.
Breathe.
Relax. Yeah, for sure. So I encourage people to not start with anal play unless you've been preparing all day long. So maybe you've had a like butt plug on or whatever throughout the day, then you've kind of already done the foreplay for the anal sex. But if you can have multiple orgasms, start off with a few orgasms that come from somewhere else, nipples, your vulva, your clit, whatever, even like your back. Yeah, maybe you start with like a sensual massage, like really, really get comfortable such that there's no anxiety around the play and your sphincter muscles are able to relax and you're more ready to accept a visitor, shall we say. That's my top 5 points.
I love it. I love the top five because like it's just, it's there. Okay, can I just ask this question? When douching or using an enema, and you're squirting water up your anus, and like, how do you ensure that you've squeezed everything out and you've let everything out, and it's not going to come out later?
Yeah, so that's a big concern for a lot of people. The best starting point is don't eat heavy moments leading up to a play session. And this can even start the day before. So if you know tomorrow, maybe I'm going to have some booty sex, eat light that previous day and the day off. So like if you want something meaty, then I'll say stick to fish. Avoid like the red meat. Avoid heavy things like a lot of carbs and starches and like bananas and corn, like, you know, that kind of stuff. Just try and stay like nice summer food. Don't avoid winter food. Right. So that's like already step number one. You can guarantee things are going to be light for the next day. And then number two is if you know it's going to be shallow penetration, you can just do a light, douching. And so that's a matter of limiting the amount of water you're introducing, right? Because you want to get whatever is in the very bottom part of your rectum and get that out. And don't, because the more water you introduce into the system, the more likely you're going to dislodge things that are way up. And once you release anything that's way up, all of it is going to want to come out. So if you overcommit to the shallow douching, you then going to have to do like a full enema to really just like get rid of everything. So that will involve a lot more work. So if you know you want to go shallow, do a few rinses. And if the water is starting to come out clean, then you're good. I would say then wait for maybe another 30 minutes, go back to the bathroom and just check. And if nothing comes out, then yeah, you're pretty good. Or you can insert a toy that's slightly bigger than whatever you're expecting to go in and then just check that nothing dislodges. Yeah.
What is the difference between the douching and the enema? Is it the amount of water or is it the actual tool that you're using to squirt up?
An enema is more thorough. It's going to be a lot more liquid going through, right? It's here's a good way of putting it. An enema is like taking a bath, right? A douching is like, you know, when you wake up and use like your two fingers to remove the eye crust from your eyes.
One is actually washing your face and the other is just a wipe. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so one version is like really, really, really thorough. And the other version is not superficial. It's is adequate if you know you're not going to be doing intense work. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think anal stimulation is underrated. And I think there's obviously in society, we have like this misconception that like only the gays do anal stimulation and anal play, and that straight people don't, or that, you know, cis men don't. And I'm always like, but you're so focused on the female ejaculation and the female G-spot, but the G-spot for men is in the prostate, so why is it overlooked? Do you have any tips for those that are, you know, maybe there's going to be a lot of panic around putting something in, but also when you take something out, and a lot of panic around actually finding good pleasure there if you are, you've been taught like homophobic ideas around anal play?
So that goes back to a more, a bigger conversation with yourself, like an internal conversation around how you see sex. I think I may have mentioned this in the book as well. A lot of the time in my peer group of straight dudes, what I notice is it's not so much about the pleasure, and it's what you're saying is that the homophobia, the internalized homophobia as well. So, and the other aspect is also, if you're on the receiving end of penetration, it's typically the first time you've ever been on the receiving end. And certainly you now start to kind of consider how you penetrate other people, right? And you're thinking, oh, I don't think I want that done to me, right? So it's a moment to introspect around how you're having sex in general, right? Mm-hmm. If you feel penetration is this violation, this really messed up thing to receive, that speaks a lot to what kind of energy you bring into your penetrative sex already, right? So so if you look at it, you got to look at it in a different way to say, when you have sex with someone and you are the one doing some form of penetration, you are not dominating that person necessarily. They're not losing any power. They are not submitting to you. They're receiving and you're giving. You're sharing a thing, right? There's no power there. It's just a thing that you're sharing, right? So if you look at being penetrated in the same way, then there's no problem. You're just receiving some nice things, right? Yeah. It's not like when you bite someone's earlobes, are you dominating them versus when they bite yours? No, it's just a thing that you like. You both like it, so let it happen. Yeah, or you all like, let me say both. We all like it. So yeah, for me, it's people need to have a bit of a close examination of how they view sex and how they interact with sex, the power within it, and the perceived loss and gain of power around sex. And then anal sex is just becomes another aspect of your pleasure after that, if you don't have any qualms around power.
Okay, before we wrap things up, I want to know if people want to buy a rope kit from you and get involved or get in touch with you or just find more information or find the Quirky Quick Guide to Having Great Sex, how do we find Tapiwa Sunga Kunji? How do we find the rope magicness?
So everything typically I do it through my Instagram page. So Sunga Kunji, which actually means tie rope. That's what that moniker means. Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, send me a DM. If you want to organize a consult, then we have a, how it normally works is then we have like a long format conversation before we actually meet up and do anything. So I'll send you a questionnaire. We have cover things like, why do you want to do this? Have you done roleplay before? What's your current physical state, mental state? Why, what reasons are you doing this for? Do you have a history of trauma in a sensual context? You know, all these things. We have like a really long revealing conversation before I can be like, okay, I think I can help you with what you're looking for. Because a lot of the time people think rope would help them with something. And then we have this chat, they're like, oh, actually, I don't think I'm looking for rope work at all. Mm. And then, or sometimes people are like, I don't know if I want rope. And then we discuss it. I'm like, I can offer you this kind of rope work. And they're like, yeah, that sounds a lot like what I'm looking for versus what I've seen on TV or in porn or whatever. So DM, we have a conversation, and then we set up a time for an actual in-person interaction. And then in terms of rope kits, same thing, DM me. I sell a rope kit typically a total of 42 meters and a bag and some safety shears of jute rope that's been conditioned, and that's about 600 rand. And you can buy it unconditioned from me as well. Then you condition yourself if you feel like you can do that. And if you feel like you can't afford to get any because 600 rand is just too expensive for you right now or in general, then I also you can speak to me and then I can maybe provide a donated kit because I sometimes do fundraisers to get money just to buy rope kits for people who can afford them for whatever reason. So if you feel like you qualify to get a rope kit that doesn't cost money, you can send me a motivation to be like, oh, listen, I really want to get into it, but I'm struggling because of this thing. But also, before you buy any rope kit from anyone, I would suggest you just play around at home with your ties, with your scarves, belts, maybe some rope from a hardware store for like 50 rand, just to get a feeling for it and realize whether or not you like rope work. Because 600 rand is cheap in terms of rope kits, but it's still quite a bit of money to just drop on something that you're going to give up the next week. So before you commit to a full kit, just figure out if actually you do enjoy rope work.
Yeah, put in the research. But thank you so much, Tapiwa. Like, I think you are like a source of information that I can pull from all the time. So thank you for your time. And yeah, people need to like hit you up and we'll put it out there. And thank you for sharing just all your mastery, especially around anal play. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
Open wide. Say ah.